Hello, my name is Janet, and this is Two Girls and a Bottle of Wine. Because men like boobs and girls like wine, this is a very special edition of Two Girls and a Bottle of Wine, because we have some wine experts on the line, and they're going to teach us all about wine. So without further ado, here we go. Well, today I have a very special guest. His name is Dan Decker, and he's from Vino Vin Wine and Spirits, correct?
Correct.
And where are you guys located?
We're located in Upper New York State, about 90 minutes north of New York City.
Perfect. How did you find Two Girls and a Bottle of Wine?
Twitter.
Gotta love Twitter. And how long have you been in the wine industry?
About 7 months.
7 months. So you're kind of new. But you have more education than I do. I'm sure of it. When I go to buy wine, I buy by the bottle, what it looks like. The prettiest bottle.
You know, you would be, I think, incredibly surprised. I think more people do that than not, to be totally honest. Which is why the label, you know, even when people come in trying to sell us stuff, because obviously there are people that sell us stuff to sell to other people because we're a retailer, but even when they come in, they'll be like, you know, the bottle on this one, the artwork is great. People love it.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one. That makes me feel a little bit better. Now, today you wanted to talk about California wines, correct?
Correct.
Let's start as though I know nothing about wine, because I kind of don't. When it comes to California wine, what is the difference in California wine versus all of the other wine on the shelves?
I think California is at least known for... and this is like a very broad-based way of putting it, but California is known for being very, very fruit-forward. And so, like, when you drink it, when you take your first sip, it's like, whoa, fruit. And people tend to very oftentimes like that. Reviewers will refer to it as, like, fruit bombs or something. I don't know. I mean, that's how they talk about the wine and stuff. But really, that's what it boils down to, is just being fruit forward.
And there's many different kinds of California wine, right?
Yeah. So California is producing, you know, Chardonnay. They're also producing Cab. You have the full gamut of a lot of the different grape varietals that they're producing there, from Cab, Syrah, Chardonnay, Pinot, a lot of those. I haven't seen a lot of Malbecs out of California. Not to say that they don't do it. Those are the more common ones. Like a Sauve Blanc also is another common one that you'll see a lot of.
And there's different areas of where they grow the California wines, right? Like Napa Valley is a common place that you hear of, correct?
Yeah, Napa Valley is kind of like one of the premier places growing grapes and producing wine, you know, in the state. But, you know, there's lots of stuff from all over the state, and it really just depends. The weather and the terroir, like the growing conditions, are really, really big factors in what's produced and where it comes from. You know, you have stuff like Turley, which is like an old vine Zinfandel, and that has a very different style from, like, you know, a Napa Cab, which is also different from something from, say, like Santa Ynez Valley or something like that. So you have all these different regions with all these different growing conditions, which really influence, you know, what the end product is.
And I'm more of I like the sweet wines. So What kind of California wine should I kind of lean toward when I walk into my local liquor store?
I mean, what you like, you know, you'll do better off with a Pinot Gris probably than trying to think of something that's, you know, super dry that's coming out of California. Nothing's floating up right now, but, you know, probably gravitate toward a Pinot Gris or something like that. It's going to be a little fruitier, a little sweeter.
And what is your favorite California wine?
My favorite California wine, at least right now, is Stuart Sellers Napa Hollis, or however they phrase it. It's from Napa Valley, and it is a Cabernet Sauvignon.
Do they have a lot of vineyards in the Upper New York area?
There are a lot of places producing wine in New York State. Brotherhood Winery is one of the oldest wineries in the country, I think. They produce, you know, a good amount. Millbrook Winery is another one that's right near us. It's probably one of the closest ones. But, yeah, they have them kind of all over the state. The Finger Lakes is one of the better-known wine-producing regions in New York State. And they're known especially for, you know, their Rieslings. And
I have recently been liking the cupcake wines. They have the Red Velvet and the Moscato.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about what I'm drinking when I'm drinking those?
So the Moscato is just the grape in it. The cupcake wines, Moscato d'Asti's got like a little bit of bubbly, I think, to it, or it should anyway. And that's just, talking about the grape varietal there. Moscato's known for being a little bit of a dessert wine.
And I have a sweet tooth, so that makes complete sense as to why I love that wine.
Yeah, it's known for being very sweet. The Red Velvet Cupcake, it's interesting that you like that one, actually, because I wouldn't think that that one would be as sweet. It's a Zinfandel Merlot and a Petite Sirah, which will give it some jamminess, but also that Merlot is going to make it a little bit drier. But that's interesting that, you know, that's another one that you really seem to enjoy.
It's a new thing. I tell everyone I must be getting older. Because it's red, and it is a little bit drier than what I'm used to. It's not the sangrias or the Pinot Grigios that I've been drinking. And so I blame it on age. But I seem to really like it.
Good.
I found this great article I wanted to share with you. As the wine guy, it has to do with millennials and wine. So millennials and wine, yes. Well, there's 62 million millennials in America who are old enough to drink. And because of that, it seems that they're rapidly changing the way wine is marketed. Baby boomers still lead in wine consumption, but millennials, people who were born in the early 1980s to 2000, are the fastest growing demographic. So these are five ways that millennials are influencing the wine world. So I want to get your take on this, okay?
All right,
so bang for the buck. Millennials, whose budgets are more limited than boomers, don't show off by bringing the most expensive bottle of wine to the party. They choose bottles in the $10 to $12 range for everyday consumption and rarely go higher than $20 for a special occasion. Rather than splurging, they rely on the resources at hand to select value-focused wines crafted from unique grape varietals in reputable regions. Do you see that in your store?
Yeah, I think quite a bit. Yeah, we definitely see that big time. I mean, the trend for, I think, most people, and some of this is our store and location as far as the brick and mortar. But I think by and large, it's also symptomatic of, you know, what that article was kind of indicating. You know, I talk to my friends in Ohio or I talk to people in different places, and the two or three things that you find, and especially in online marketing, is that people, A, want that most bang for your buck, and that's really what our store is about, and that's kind of what we focus on. We've got, for instance, like a $8 California Chardonnay or $9 California Chardonnay that is just, like, so good. You know, it's a little oak, it's a little butter, it's a little fruit, it's nothing crazy, but incredibly well-balanced for what you're getting for $9, especially for California, which is really, really impressive. And I say especially for California because a lot of times what you get is they'll use oak chips and other things that really bring out one dominant flavor if it's oak, or, you know, maybe it's super fruity, but you don't have a lot of other stuff. And so there's not a lot of contrast. But, you know, our $10 selection is definitely what moves the most. When I talk with people about a special occasion, unless it's something where somebody's getting a gift, maybe for somebody older, I've noticed they'll sometimes spend more, but otherwise it's really about, you know, even a $20 bottle. We've got a $20 2003 Super Tuscan that, you know, people are like kind of impressed by because, you know, they hear an older vintage and they think, oh, you know, that's not a lot of money for an older vintage. Because everyone that, you know, has heard anything about wine knows, oh yeah, okay, you know, older wine, you know, sometimes better, that kind of thing.
Is that always the case?
No, definitely not. Because you get stuff that, you know, take a 2007 Muscadet or something, or a 2007 Vino Verde, and it's going to be god-awful because those are meant to be drunk right away. You know, it's the same thing as, like, this whole perception about the screw cap. You know, a screw cap is an inferior wine or something, and it's simply not the case. You know, it's like,
I am so happy you're saying that. Because when I go to a party and I bring wine, I rarely grab a screw cap because I don't want to be judged.
Yeah, no, screw cap wines can be great. It's the bottom line is very simple. A, cork is very expensive and it's in, you know, limited supply. And B, the only reason you really need a cork in wine is if you're going to let it sit for a while. And by a while, I mean, like, you know, 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Something like that. You know, if you have a screw cap, obviously you want to drink that sooner than later, you know, within probably the first year. But anything made with a screw cap, for the most part, just it's because you're supposed to drink it now and you're not going to sit on it.
And so once you open a bottle of wine that has a screw cap, how long is it good after
opening it? Screw cap? Yes. screw cap or cork. Mm-hmm. Really, once you open something, it's like 2 days.
Okay, that's anyone what I've always that, heard.
Yeah, anyone that really wants to stretch out a bottle, maybe that, you know, maybe they will have one, you know, on Wednesday or something, and they're not going to open it again until Saturday. Anyone that kind of does that and ends up throwing out wine should definitely make an investment in a vacuum bin. It's like this little thing that just the top goes on and you pull air out of the bottle, basically, and it keeps it fresh for another couple days. And so you can use this vacuum bin and it'll keep the wine fresh for, you know, maybe a week or so, depending on what it is. If it's a white and you keep it in the fridge, it'll definitely stay for a week. If it's a red and your house isn't too hot and you use the vacuum bin, it'll stay probably about 5 days, 6 days before it gets questionable.
How do you know when it's questionable?
They smell and taste very vinegary. It'll gotcha. Turn more and more into vinegar, you know, red wine vinegar or whatever. But that's kind of what ends up happening is it starts oxidizing, and that's the sense that you kind of get.
And what's the difference in a synthetic cork and a cork?
You know what? I wish I knew. I'm not really, I couldn't speak super knowledgeably about that. If you give me one moment.
No problem. The reason is I ask, because when I buy the cupcake Moscato, it's an actual cork. But when I buy the red velvet cupcake, then it's a synthetic cork. And so I've always wondered, they're coming from the same brand. So my brain thinks, why? Why are they choosing to do two different corks?
So one thing I know for sure is that, you know, again, cork, real cork, takes a very, very long time to grow. I can't remember. I feel like it's like 10 years or something, or 20 years for a cork tree to be ready to produce cork. Synthetic, I think one or two things is it's just like the screw cap. Personally, I wouldn't want a synthetic cork being left in something I'm going to drink in 10 years because I have no idea, you know, what that synthetic cork is actually doing to the wine in the bottle. You know,
yeah.
You think about it, and it's that cork is sitting in contact with your wine for however long. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the best thing for you. But, you know, in general, I think some of it is also about the fact that synthetic is probably easier to produce, and in some ways, even though it's made from chemicals and stuff, it's going to be more environmentally friendly because they're not having to cut down a ton of cork oaks, you know, in order to produce these.
Right. Another thing in this article about millennials and wine, it's the sweet spot. Millennials prefer wines with less tannin and more sugar and are developing a taste for sparkling sweet wines, including Moscato d'Asti, Prosecco, and even Sangria. Moscato leads the pack. Sales of Italian imports were up almost 27% last year. Now producers from other regions are adding sweet sparkling wines to their lineups. Are you seeing that as well? I know I love a good Prosecco.
Yeah, Prosecco is like huge. You know, I think everyone loves Prosecco. And
it's the bubbly.
It's definitely a big mover for us. As far as the Moscato d'Asti, I see that to some extent. People I've noticed that are not super accustomed to drinking wine tend to gravitate toward those.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't really explain that, to be honest, because when I started drinking wine, I only preferred red, and then I didn't like white until much later. Yeah, but it just, you know, it depends. So I've seen that as far as Prosecco goes, but I haven't seen young people gravitating a lot towards sweet wine overall.
And then surfing for wine. Thanks to the internet, wine lovers no longer have to take a costly trip to California or France to learn how wine is made. They can simply watch a YouTube video or connect with their Dan Deckers to learn about wine. And there's apps out there that allows users to learn about specific wines and keep track of the ones they like. Do you have any of these apps on your phone?
I do. I have Delectable.
That is the one listed. And what was the other one?
Vivino.
Those are the two listed in the article. I wanted to check. I was checking.
Yeah.
So those matched up. So how do these apps work?
They're very similar, but also have some distinct differences as well. The basis is that you have a wine, you like it, you take a picture of it, or maybe you're just in the store shopping around and you take a picture of it. And through this picture, it has a label match where it'll find the wine. that you're looking at. And you can pull up, you know, reviews from people. You can pull up average pricing. I think on Vivino you can do average pricing. I can't remember if Delectable you do or not. And then there are also options to buy on there and that kind of thing, because people sometimes will be like, oh, okay, yeah, I want to buy this, or they see it's cheaper or whatever else. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Delectable, I think, has a little bit more of a sense of wine community behind it, because Vivino is really an app driven by their reviews and, you know, whatever else, but they also have a very robust advertising and basically like advertising package where, you know, us as a retailer can get on there and list our wines and market to people. Whereas Delectable is very, very tight in how they source their stuff. They do sell, but they got to come to you. You know, we've sold through Delectable once, but it's because they came to us looking for a very specific wine that we carried. And, you know, that was exciting, but, it's more of a community than anything else surrounding Delectable, I think, where, you know, you join and then somebody else joins and like, oh, you know, you have a friend request. So it's kind of almost like a social media integration type thing. And you don't get that as much with Vivino.
And how do you choose what wines you sell?
Us?
Yes.
We have one primary supplier that we work with. And I think that a lot of times, one thing I'm seeing, which is interesting to me, is this whole concept of, you know, Club W is doing it. And I think that you see a lot of other wine clubs do it, you know, cut out the middleman, get wine straight from the winery. You know, it's not more expensive. And like, it's true, but not true. I mean, you have to move. If you think about it, really, we work with a wholesaler who helps us pick out our wine, and he's great. Basically, our portfolio or our store carries completely a state bottled wine system out. And by state bottled, I mean that they come from, you know, small production vineyards around the world. And, you know, they're producing only a couple thousand cases a lot of times. And so it's not like huge mass produced quantities. And what you end up getting is the people are super invested in that process and, you know, they've been historical winemakers for a very long time. They care about what they're doing. They care about the land that they're developing it on. And it shows through in the wine. You know, we've never really carried anything bad that I can think of. And everything that we bring in, we try before we bring it in. So we're very cautious about how we put stuff on our shelves. You know, if we try something and we're like, this is not very good. And it's also relative. You know, if we try a wine and, you know, we know it's going to be a $5 bottle of wine, we're a little less selective with that. It's still got to be good, but we wouldn't be like, oh, no, no, this has got awful for $5. It's, you keep your expectations in line with what you're paying, but things got to be drinkable. So,
and do you have like a special like shelf on your store, like $10 and less or $20 and less wines?
Yeah, so we have actually two different kind of distinctions. We have in the center of our store, we have all the wines for $10 or less. And then online, obviously, you can sort by price and everything else, and that's a pretty standard feature, so that's easy enough to sort out. And then we also have a little shelf area, basically, where we carry all of the, I would call them high-end, I guess. And we don't have anything crazy. Nothing in our stores over $100, but more of our high-end type stuff.
Okay. All right. And so can you sell wine online?
Yeah.
How does that work? Like, how do you verify age and such?
So UPS has been great working with retailers on that. And UPS and FedEx both have contracts where they set up these very specific requirements. And there are only certain states you can ship to depending on what state you're in. You know, for us, there are only a couple that we can actually send out to. But basically, what they do is when they do a delivery, they verify the person's age by requiring a signature and an ID on the delivery. So, you know, where normally UPS, you order something, they drop it off and you just find it and it's sitting there. When they do a wine delivery, you have to sign for it and they have to verify your age before they do it. So you have to be home, which is kind of good, but also can create a challenge for people that are ordering wine online. And so you see a lot of times they'll get it shipped to work or wherever else too.
Okay.
And which then actually cheaper for them, or it should be.
It is?
I think so.
That's awesome. That's a tip that everyone should write down right now. Your website, your web address is vinovinonline.com, correct?
Yep.
Okay. And I will share that with the masses. In this article, it says knowledge is power. Whether it's the grape variety or the compelling story behind a winemaker or region, millennials want to learn. So marketers are providing more information about exactly what's in the bottle. Millennials also love to share information, which makes them an even more appealing demographic because they spread the word. Have you noticed that change over the last, I don't know, you must have had an eye on the wine industry before jumping into owning a store, right?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I fit in the millennial demographic, so I think that even a lot of that fits me, where I was super interested in learning about what I was drinking, and that's what led me into the industry in the first place. I was super interested in learning about what I was drinking, and what is this, where does it come from? You know, why is a Bordeaux called a Bordeaux, but it's made from, you know, Merlot and Cabernet and Petit Verdot and, you know, whatever else. And to me, that was really interesting, and I wanted to know more. And, you know, so you go on and you read stuff about it and whatever else. And that's why content marketing for these, you know, wine bloggers online and even on our site, we do, you know, a decent amount of content because people are engaged with it. It's important. You know, in online marketplaces now, content is everything. If you don't have good content, people don't really have a reason to go to your store because, you know, what are they really going there for? I mean, yeah, you can go and you can click a button and you can buy online, but you can do that with Amazon or a million other places now too. It's not like exclusive.
Right.
So it sets you apart.
It is all about the story. All right. Well, is there anything else that you can add when it comes to buying wine? When I walk into my local store, what do I need to prepare before walking in?
So I think a couple things. Not everyone pairs wine with food, but if you're looking for a specific wine to pair with a meal, you should definitely keep that in the back of your mind and be able to tell somebody in the store, hey, I'm cooking beef. You know, what should I get? You know, one of the other things, you know, you kind of hit the nail on that as far as price point is that you don't really know, I guess, until you try it. If places do tastings or if they'll taste you on a wine before you can buy it, that's always a plus, you know, and I do that a lot with people when they come in because you don't really know. You have an idea of what your tastes are. You know that you like a Moscato, which means that you'll probably also like a Riesling, you know, because Riesling's kind of on the sweet side too. But beyond that, there's this plethora of different things that you can get into. You know, white wine can be dry, it can be sweet, it can be full bodied like a red, or it can be super light. You know, on the red side, you can also have a very light red where people always think about reds as being heavier, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, so it really is just contingent on what do you like? What are you into? You know, and make sure that you're getting something that aligns with that. You know, two Cabernets are also not created equal and two vintages are not created equal. You know, you take something. I'm not going to name the name of the wine because I don't want to get into trouble.
Right.
But I was talking to one of the other guys we work with yesterday when we were talking about the 2012 versus 2013 vintage of a particular Cabernet. And it made us sound very snooty, which I just kind of laugh at now because it's really, when you get into it, you like learning about it and you like talking about it and you like trying wine. It's not snooty as much as just another way of another preference. I'm not judging anyone that doesn't necessarily know about that or share the same opinion. But we were talking about the 2012 vintage and we were like, yeah, that was like a lot better. The 2013 is just fruit and like wood and that's it. And we were just surprised that from the exact same producer, only 1 year apart, this wine was so dramatically different. And so that kind of thing can happen too.
Can it be weather? Like different factors could determine why that would be, correct?
Yeah, weather is a huge factor. I mean, you have stuff, if you look back, Bordeaux is a really interesting one to read about because Bordeaux is like just, you know, so famous that you can go through and you can look through vintages for the last, you know, 100 years almost. And they'll talk about differences and the harvest that year, talk about differences. Like, I think there was a streak in the 80s or 90s where they were producing good stuff, and then all of a sudden they just had a couple of really bad harvests a few years in a row, and just everything in the vintage, people were like, yeah, this is not so great. And that's not like the wine producers were doing anything bad or really doing anything enormously different. It's just the end product they got, the fruit that they were getting from their vines, for whatever reason, was different because it had rained a lot more, or it rained less, you know, or there was too much heat at a certain point, which, you know, caused the grapes to ripen faster. It just depends.
You have a blog on your website. Are you the one that keeps that up?
I am more the tech guy.
Gotcha.
Rob or Parker, who probably should have talked to you more about the California cabs, and maybe we'll set that up.
I think you did great.
Rob is the brains behind a lot of the wines. I'm learning a lot, but he's been in the restaurant and bar industry for 20 years. He is our go-to guy when it comes to a lot of this stuff. So
okay, all right. Excellent.
So he writes most of the content, and I take care of back-end, you know, programming. That website is built on Shopify, and it's, you know, a theme that you pick out, but we've done a lot of customization to it, and most of that was my doing.
Now, what is your all-time favorite wine right now? If you had to choose one wine to drink for the rest of the year, what would it be?
Backstory Chardonnay, probably.
Okay.
Although that would be tough. I wouldn't want to drink it in the winter. But right now, I drink it, like, you know, every couple of days.
So it's like a summertime.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Two Girls and a Bottle of Wine. We really focus on, like, pop culture, what's happening in the world. I want to do some question and answer fun with you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Just
all right.
To get to know Dan Decker a little bit more. All right. So first of all, are you from New York? Where did you come from? What's your mini biography?
Ohio? Cleveland, yep.
And what brought you to New York?
I was coaching college swimming.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
A little bit of a jump.
And how long have you been in New York?
5 years.
Do you love it, or do you want to eventually return?
I like it. You know, the whole winter thing in the Northeast in general and Midwest is just, after 30 years of it gets a little rough.
You guys went through a very rough winter this last winter.
Oh, my God. Just feet. We had more snowfall last winter than we did this winter, actually. But it didn't snow here until January. And then when it started snowing, it just didn't stop for, like, 2 months. It just, every day, just feet. Yeah. So it was kind of crazy.
So you've been in the wine business for 7 months. Does that mean that's when you bought your current store?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And what motivated you to get into that?
Just loved it. Thought it was cool. Thought it was interesting. Make a change, you know.
Is it your only job?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And what was the last movie that you went to?
Last movie I went to was Jurassic World.
That everyone's talking about that movie, and I haven't seen it. Give me a review. What did you think of that movie?
Oh, my God. Well, for me, it was a very emotional moment. You know, I mean, you grow up on Jurassic Park, right? You know,
yeah.
Our generation, you know, like, we started out on Jurassic Park. I was a kid when that came out, you know, and it was like this crazy thing where, oh, my God, like, the special effects were out of this world. You know, they really brought these dinosaurs to life, and it was, like, exciting and interesting. And
a little scary as a kid.
Yeah, and, like, the thing that was so cool about it, though, is, like, you know, you wondered for all those years after, you're like, you know, what would the park have been like? And then they come out with this one. It's like the park is actually open. Like, they actually have people going there. They have, like, all their dinosaurs. Everything's under control. And it's just this kind of really crazy moment where you're sitting there in the theater and you're like, oh, my God, it's like this has come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
So it was awesome, though. Loved it. People, it's getting mixed bags. Some people, I think, are not as thrilled with, like, some of the gimmicky stuff that maybe they threw in there at certain moments. But overall, I thought it was great.
Now, when it comes to music, who are you listening to right now on replay?
I listen to Pandora a lot. Mm-hmm. And my station is either Mumford & Sons or One Republic.
Okay. What's going on in the news that's caught your eye recently?
Super downer, right? This whole thing, South Carolina. I mean, that's
right.
Not what we're talking about. And then there was that other crazy story about that woman in Washington, and She was pretending to be black, but wasn't black.
Right.
I don't know. That was kind of wild. I saw that, and I saw it on Facebook, and I was like, I'm not even getting into this. I don't know what's happening.
Right. Yes. So. I think her name's Rachel Dozal. Yeah. That was all over my Facebook feed. I don't know about you. I was like, you couldn't avoid it. It was kind of like the whole black, blue, gold dress thing. It was like one of those things where you scroll and it's every other story.
The dress was gold and white, by the way. Just so everybody knows, it was not.
It's official. It's official. Dan Decker has made it official. It was gold and white.
I know the scientific testing or whatever they did for it. They're like, no, it's blue and black. I was like, whatever. This is nonsense. They took a blue and black dress and made it look white and gold.
Yeah.
So.
Lighting can do anything. It's just like makeup. Yeah. The power of makeup, the power of lighting. What's going on in your area? Like, in our area, it's finally stopped raining. We don't typically get a lot of rain. It's finally stopped raining and starting to warm up, and it feels like summer is upon us. What's going on in Upper New York?
It's heating up, man. School's about to get out. They're in school, like, forever
wow.
here.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, we would get out, like, first week in June. They're, like, still in school until the third week in June. So everyone's about to finish up. It's white wine season, so everyone is blowing through that stuff, and that's pretty exciting, obviously, for us as a business.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think everyone's just kind of antsy for the school year to end.
What are your favorite things to do in the summertime?
I swim. I do, like, the triathlon thing.
Oh, wow.
Really, that's, like, a good portion of the time, you know, when I'm not working or spending time with my fiance, that's usually what I'm up to.
Very cool. And so how long do you train for these triathlons? Is it constant all year?
So I do two runs, two rides, two lifts, and two swims a week. And that's like maintenance.
And then leading up to the actual triathlon, what does that look like?
8 weeks out, if you're staying in shape and you've identified what you want to do, I try and up it to three of those each a week. You know, lifting three times, getting three runs in, and three bikes and three swims, and increasing the volume on all those a decent bit as well. What you end up having to do is you have to kind of brick things, is what they call it. When you do, you know, you'll go a bike run, or you'll go, you know, a swim run. Even I don't know how many people really combine the swimming and running as much. I do all the time. I don't know how common it is, but, you know, for me, I'll do stuff like that pretty frequently. And you'll go out and do 40-minute swim, you know, get in 2,000 yards or something, and then go for a 3-mile run.
Well, Dan Decker, I do want to thank you so much for being on Two Girls and a Bottle of Wine. And thank you so much for reaching out. We'll keep in touch. And I would love to have your partner on the show.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you guys so much for listening. You found us once, but can you find us again? Make sure and check out our website at twogirlsandabottleofwine.com. You can listen to us on Podbean, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Rockin' Comedy Radio, iTunes, Stitcher. All of our links can be found on Tumblr and Blogspot. Thanks, and we'll see you again soon.